We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
All right, into the 1 o'clock hour, coming up in about 17 minutes or so, we'll get to our golf bets. You guys remember from last week, we said, hey, Cody talked us into using some of the show funds to raise the show funds by gambling. Nick was in a legal betting state over the weekend, Pennsylvania. As we determined, he also now is getting his girlfriend involved in the betting. She lives in a legal gambling state. He's done some research, staying up very late at night. He's our golf guy.
He's sitting up things at like 1 a.m. in his research.
Yeah, we were texting pretty late about golf bets. He's got some for us we're going to use for the PGA Championship this weekend. In fact, I realize we need to ask Whit. Maybe we can send him a text. I meant to ask him in the clubhouse the other day. We need his pick for the PGA Championship, Whit Merrifield, that is, as well. But Nick's got him. We're going to find out. And who we can blame is Nick. Who we can blame, though, if it doesn't actually work. There's a lot of pressure on you. I just want you to know. This is why when you guys ask me for bets, there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure on you this week to succeed here on these golf bets.
But I'm not playing the same game that you guys play with Whit. You just have Whit on, and he just gets to pick a player. Like I'm
filling out a whole golf card.
Yeah, I'm filling out a card.
Okay, we're going to find out what it is here in a little bit. A lot of research. Seriously. Not even joking.
Serious research.
A lot of research in for that
as well. This is serious, important work. This is really important work because we need to make money.
I've agreed to cover half of the losses of the $150 we're willing to risk.
$145 now that we already.
Well, we already lost that, so I'm at $2.50 at the moment, but I'd like to maybe keep it below that. Currently, I only have $250.
We will get to that in just a little bit. But you think we should be reading into what's playing out right now with Orlando Brown Jr. and the Chiefs or not playing out at this point?
Yeah, I think it's probably about the time to start wondering if Orlando Brown Jr. is going to be a long-term player for the Chiefs. I think there's a chance in 2 months he just signs his franchise tender, and then never. Like, if he signs that, are we thinking long-term deal for Orlando Brown Jr. then? Because then it's prove-it time. Then he's going to go through an entire year proving that he should be the highest paid left tackle in the NFL. And if he proves that, I think the Chiefs are out because I don't think they want to make him the highest paid left tackle now. And the Chiefs are starting in on the built-in excuses for why they haven't spent any money in the free agency world this offseason by saying things like, well, you know, once that Orlando Brown Jr. deal gets done, and if that deal had been done, then maybe not. And he doesn't have an agent and there doesn't seem to be any rush. And I do think it's being used as a little bit of a crutch because I don't think the Chiefs want to make him the highest paid left tackle. And honestly, they shouldn't. They should not pay Orlando Brown Jr. $24 million a year if they weren't willing to make Tyreek Hill the highest paid wide receiver. It's ludicrous. Which guy mattered more to your team last year? It's fairly obvious. It was Tyreek Hill. And if that's the circumstance they're in, I'm kind of annoyed at Orlando Brown Jr. for not having an agent and making this process easier. The same as like the Ravens are probably mad at Lamar Jackson Jr. Or Lamar Jackson. You're making this hard, man. You're making this hard on us. If you want to make a realistic conversation with us, let's have it. But it's like right now, neither of these guys seem to be in the same world.
I just felt like, and I think it was most people realized when the Chiefs traded for him a year ago, Orlando Brown Jr., and they gave him a first round pick that, oh, you're going to both agree to play out the rookie deal. That was the agreement. We all knew that at the time. And most likely have to work on a long-term deal in the next offseason that would likely make him the highest paid left tackle in football. Like, this isn't like a surprise to the Chiefs or anybody. And you're right. Like, you don't have to do it because nobody actually thinks he's the best left tackle in football. Nobody's ever argued that. We do see it play out that way a lot, though, where if you're young enough, which he is, and you've been healthy enough, especially if a team used assets to acquire you, that you put yourself, I think, in a spot to where you almost kind of have to do so. Because
that is called the sunk cost fallacy. And that is a bad way to operate a business, that just because you spent an asset means you now have to spend even more resources into that asset.
Yeah, but I think they realized that when they traded for him, right? I don't think this is suddenly a new idea.
And now also, you have a whole other year of evidence.
Yeah, and he's not the best left tackle in football, but he's also not trash either. It's not.
No, he's not. Like,
so that's
not
the thing. I know you bring up that fallacy because you brought it with the Royals a lot, and I agree with you.
It's
a lot
currently happening with Carlos Santana.
Exactly, but the difference here is Carlos Santana not playing good. He's been one of the worst hitters in baseball. Orlando Brown Jr. May not be the best left tackle in football, but he's still towards the top end of left tackles in football. And so I think what's happening here, and that it may play out the way you're saying. We had Pete Sweeney in studio last week, and he kind of alluded to maybe he plays under the tag, and then we'll see next offseason. And yeah, if he has a good year, then maybe he bets on himself. But also, I think based on what his mentor, Orlando Brown Jr.'s mentor, put out, what, a month and a half, 2 months ago, we got 2 months still, just under 2 months till that deadline, July 14th, July 15th. We kind of knew when those comments were coming out from his mentor that time I'm not, you know, I'm busy. I got to take my obligations, kind of take care of my guy, Mahomes. I got his wedding coming up. Like, he was slow playing it from the beginning, whether he had an agent or not. I don't think we should be at that point today where we're like, man, I don't think it's getting done. It may end up being that case. Like, I don't know. Maybe if we're going to maybe start seeing some stuff leak out over the next couple of weeks and months, we're still 2 months away, though, man. Like, we've seen this play out before where it takes some time. So I'm not ready to sit here on May and say, oh, no, it's just not going
to
happen.
It's more, you know, the more I talk to other people who seemingly get some of it is just like they've got a similar sense of it and that thing. And I'm not saying that there's no chance. But, I mean, like think about where's the logic? Where is the logic in letting Tyreek Hill go because he wants to be paid by a couple of million dollars as the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL, but keeping a left tackle who is like the 12th best left tackle, or, well, I don't know, maybe 8th best left tackle, 9th best left tackle, for $2 million above the highest paid guy. Like, and the only logic is the sunk cost thing I just talked about.
Right.
But well, I spent a first round pick. You don't have to compound bad decisions with more decisions.
You don't.
Like, you can just be like, well, we got 2 years out of him. We wish we'd have gotten more out of a first round pick, typically speaking. Yeah. But it is what it is now. We got 12 picks next year. We will continue to solve this problem.
Look, I might not have a fancy term like you do to describe what this would be, but also there's got to be a situation and a term for your logic, though, of, well, because you didn't do it for Tyreek Hill, you can't do it for Orlando Brown Jr.
Sure.
What's that called?
Sure.
I don't know. There's got to be.
I mean, look, the comparison
is
not the same, and the positions are not the same, and I understand that. But, like, let's just say from a monetary perspective, like, I spent the first round pick. Okay, well, and you got to go get a left tackle next year. Well, there'll be left tackles on the market. I don't know exactly who it is right now. I don't want to look up to it. I mean, Cam Robinson just signed the extension, so not him.
Not going to be cheap, though. We can agree that. It's not like it's going to get
that guy.
Nobody's
going to cost exactly the same amount as Orlando Brown. You're not stuck with just him. There's no reason you have to pay him in particular.
What makes you think, a free agent left tackle next year that is 27 years old isn't going to want to become the highest paid left tackle?
What if he's better than Orlando Brown, though?
Yeah, I have no idea.
I know, but Trent Williams was available last year. He's better than Orlando Brown. He's the best left tackle in football. He would have been available for top left tackle money.
And guess what? The Chiefs couldn't get him.
No, you're right. And you take a risk. I'm not saying it doesn't come with that risk, because it definitely does. Because if you go into that free agent market and you're negotiating with Orlando Brown and every other potential left tackle who could possibly be available, then you're stuck. Because then the other choice is to sink more cost into it, right? Do you use another draft pick in order to get the guy, someone else you're going to have to pay? Or is that guy more willing to take a contract at the level at which you want to pay it? There's not a good solution here, but I'm kind of annoyed that Orlando Brown Jr. won't just get an agent.
Well,
so that of this stuff can start working itself out, because if they're not going to get, honestly, he needs an agent, because I don't think in the open market, I think if he's a free agent right now, I don't think he'd get more money than Trent Williams.
Well, that might be why he doesn't have an agent.
Maybe I'm misevaluating it, but I don't think that would happen.
I think the fact that he doesn't have an agent probably is for what you're bringing up there. Like,
Someone told him to get 22, get 18 million a year.
Or his old, you know, or finding an agent that is willing to go for that. Whereas,
tell him he wants to hear.
Right. And so I wonder if that's also, the Chiefs won't say it publicly, but I bet they're annoyed. I bet they're annoyed by the fact that they're sitting around here. It's May 18th and doesn't appear to be any real progress on a potential long-term deal. Just remember, it's mid-July is the deadline and we're a ways off.
2 months. Yeah. I mean, it'll be...
Brett Veach said, you know, I'm not going to play the full cut again, but back in April, we played earlier today on the show, that, you know, once the draft is over, there'll be a chunk of time we can focus in. Well, now we're in that chunk of time. The draft was 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. So now we're in that chunk of time. I think where you start to get nervous about the long-term potential is if we get to, like, middle of June and there's nothing and we're a month out.
I think it's a 50-50 shot right now he signs a long-term extension. If he doesn't get a long-term extension by the time the deadline, I'm at, like, 10%. And I'm assuming yours takes a huge plummet.
It has to.
If he doesn't get the long-term deal done in the time that he has to, and then he's just a free agent, you have to just derail all of the talks of how likely it is he signs long-term the season with Kansas City.
My concern just is post-2022 is if he's not part of that long-term vision, whether you think
the dollar... What's the plan on left tackle?
You know,
Joe Tooney?
I know we saw the one half of football or three quarters of football, and I get it was, but that's a big question mark still. As good as Joe Tooney is at left guard, that's still, if he was your left tackle, that's still a huge question. And then, okay, we know right now we still don't know long term on the right tackle, at the right tackle spot. You know, Niang at one point looked like maybe he could be the guy. He's not going to probably be ready for the start of the season. Kennard, they drafted, maybe turns out to be a diamond in the rough, but we don't know yet. And that's, so he's probably a right tackle, best case scenario, not a left tackle.
At least they're easier to find than left tackles. But
so
yeah.
I think that puts you in a really, really tough spot. We feel great about the interior of the offensive line, but all of a sudden on your both edges, long term, you may not have answers if you don't sign him to a long-term deal. That scares the heck out of me.
I know, but it's that or sinking $24 million a year into a left tackle you're not confident in. And also, if he's this guy, get me out of Baltimore. I'm only a left tackle. No way. I will only sign for top left tackle money. I'm either the highest paid left tackle or nothing. Does that seem like the just personality-wise, that seem like the kind of person who's going to be motivated after they get paid? Because I got questions about that line of thinking, and then when you get to the you've been paid part. Because there are players that after you pay them, it's a problem. Like, they become a bigger problem. Because the motivation to become a left tackle, which Orlando Brown had, the motivation to become the highest paid left tackle, which he currently has, that goes away. And you just pay $24 million a year.
Do you think the Chiefs should, do you think the Chiefs should have traded for him then? Given, remember at the time what the circumstances were at the time, because
if I could go back in time, no.
Who would have played? Honestly,
I don't know, man. I mean, it would have been ugly. It'd have been Andrew Weiland. They probably wouldn't have gone as far. But I also know in retrospect they didn't win the Super Bowl either of those two years either. So no.
But at the time,
I know more stuff now, so it's much easier to say that.
At the time, though, it made all the sense in the world.
Of course,
they
it did.
Right, I mean that's the tricky part. But if they don't get a long term deal done, then you gave up a first round pick for 2 years of a
non-winning Super Bowl.
To pick, we don't know what happens this year, but yeah.
Sure. Oh yeah, yeah.
We'll see how. I don't know how this year will play out. You would hope it.
That's the Frank Clark thing. They win.
Sure.
If they win,
takes
the Super
care
Bowl,
of a lot of it.
Then I don't care if they gave up the first round pick and then let him walk. Then it just washes everything away.
Yeah.
And it should. Similar to that of the Frank Clark deal. I'll never be as angry about the Frank Clark deals, other ones that didn't work well, because they won a Super Bowl with Frank Clark. So fine. It worked out great.
Yeah, winning championships mask a lot of bad decisions and contracts if you won a championship with it also occurring at the same time. We'll get to the golf bets here in about 5 minutes or so. But the one thing for the Royals last night, at least, it was probably really, unless you have another game in mind, it was probably the second win this year where you came away and you said, oh, young pieces truly were the reason you won.
Melendez hit a homer. Singer was lights out.
I mean, how many out of the wins they have, the very few that they have?
Staumont got the close.
You know, there's been very few that you could say were guys that are potentially part of the long-term plan, that you need to be part of the long-term plan, were true contributors to the victory. And yeah, last night was clear as day. Brady Singer comes back up. 7-inning shutout baseball was fantastic. Offensively, they still only scored two runs. But still only two runs, but one of them, of course, was the home run from MJ Melendez.
On what didn't even seem like a ball he got all of. Like, he got it on the barrel, but it didn't seem like it was his best swing. And it was against a lefty, so it was like all this logic, all this reasoning behind it made you feel good. Honestly, you just want some of the pitchers to step up. That's why I kind of like that it's Heasley, Hernandez, and Singer. There's only two spots in the rotation for those three guys right now. Okay, great. Heasley's been whatever. He's been totally whatever. It's fine. Like, you don't walk out of his starts being like, wow, look at his stuff. But he's not blown a game for them. He hasn't completely erased them from a game the way Bubic was. And now Singer looks dominant. And I hope Carlos Hernandez, when he starts for the Royals tomorrow for the day game, looks dominant too, because then at least there's competition at this position. The thing with Singer is he seems like the kind of personality that is going to be motivated, like as good as anybody, by the I'm never letting them send me to Omaha ever again. I know technically last night he was sent back down. I'll just let you know. That's procedural. Like, you want to know the reality of?
Yeah, we asked J.J. Piccolo, and you're going to hear our conversation with him coming up in about 15 minutes, for the Royals general manager. You asked him that very question, like, hey, is this just procedural? And he gave us an answer. You'll hear that coming up.
Yeah, he didn't say that for sure. Like, well, I mean, it's hard to ignore, because you want to know the other thing is, even though the Royals have not been this organization, the Royals leave Brady Singer down in the minor leagues for like a week. They get a whole extra year of control. And I know that we kind of like that the Royals don't operate that way, because it's very player-friendly, and the players like coming back to Kansas City because they're not treated like trash when they're here. from a winning perspective, there's a lot of logic in what if we what if we let Brady Singer start again, but in 10 days, not a week? Because especially now that we don't know that the Royals are going to be ready by next year, right? Like, you might want that extra year of lead time from these starters. But it was encouraging. You know why? Because he threw a changeup, and he threw it all the time, and he threw it in counts that you weren't expecting, and it looked okay, and the fastball command was really good, and he looked like the kind of guy who was motivated to get back and stay in the big leagues forever, and it looked like that. That was as good as he had looked. That's as good as a Royals starter had looked all season long. Did you see that stat from Dave Holzman last night? He does the Fox Sports Kansas City stat broadcast. That's the first time a right-handed pitcher for the Royals has had 9 strikeouts and gone 7 innings with no walks since Zach Greinke in his Cy Young year. And look, that simultaneously talks about just how good Brady Singer was last night while telling you how bad Royals starting pitching has been for the last 15 years. But, I mean, that's what we wanted. Like, all I can do is applaud. Like, you and I have been asking for the same thing. Find me 2 or 3 starters out of all these guys you've drafted over the last 5 years who are good. Because if you can get a couple of them going at the same time, then you have a rotation and we can talk. The hitting, I got other problems. But from a pitching perspective, that was the way to get there. Brady Singer looked like that last night.
No, it was nice to see. And yeah, I think we all know he'll end up with another opportunity. And we'll talk more about that. Or we did talk more about that with JJ Piccolo. You'll hear our conversation coming up in about 10 minutes or so. Okay, Nick, the research should be done.
Like this, okay.
It's time. It's time to lay out the bets. You are our golf guy.
I've been scouring the various betting sites to find the best numbers that I possibly can on the guys that we're targeting. Now, I do have one question for you guys before we really get into this. Can I have a few more minutes? Can I have maybe just another?
No.
Like 20 minutes or so?
Come on. You've had like four days. What are we talking about? This on Friday? Yeah, we agreed to bet money?
The numbers are moving. The market's fluid.
Yeah, you gotta put in the bet then. But if you wait till 8 o'clock tonight, the odds change a little bit. Everybody's talking about Matsuyama now, and guess what? The odds aren't as good.
Well, and now all of a sudden there's maybe concerns that he's got a neck problem or a back problem. So it's okay. You could have had him at 50, then at 40, then at 25. Now he's all the way down to 20. So we are off Hideki Matsuyama.
We're done.
We're done with him.
No,
but
Matsuyama.
You know what? What about Patrick Cantlay? Do you like him?
I do not like Patrick Cantlay. Now, the way this course is going to play out, he does fit the model. He's the prototype. You need to be a good long iron player.
Are we putting all our money on Tiger?
On approach? No, we're not going to put our money. But Patrick Cantlay, bad track record in majors. So we're going to be staying away from Patrick Cantlay. I know the profile is there, but like when you look at him next to some guys around him, here's what I want.
Isolating all these audio cuts. So if it does happen.
Listen. Here's what I want. It's a major. I want winners. I want win equity because guys like Patrick Cantlay, Victor Hovland, everybody wants to mention his name. Like, these guys are going to rack up top fives. They're going to rack up top tens. And there's bets to be made on top fives and top tens. But at a major, like, I want to know if you have the stones to stand over a 12-foot par putt on 13 on Sunday to, like, maintain your lead. I want win equity. So we are starting our card at 20-1. 2-time major champion Colin Morikawa.
Colin Morikawa. Okay. Recent Colin Morikawa. Major winner. Okay. In the last year, major
so he
winner,
won,
right?
He won the PGA Championship 2 years ago, and then last year he won the British Open. Now, 15-mile-per-hour winds. They said wind gusts on Thursday and Friday up to 30 to 40 miles per hour there. They've removed a lot of trees.
You don't worry about that with Morikawa?
No, because he won the British Open, man. Like, he has won in those elements. He's the best iron player on the planet. Now, there are some concerns about his short game, but they've removed rough around these greens, so a lot of these are just going to be tight lies. They're going to be chips from fairways. So
you're talking like you've done an impossible amount of research on this.
I have done an impossible amount of research on this.
Can you narrow it down? Because I know how we're betting overall as we're spreading this across people, but give us your 2 favorite to win it bets. Because I know we're making like 7 of them.
So these aren't necessarily what we're making, but just like my 2 favorite?
Yeah. Morikawa 20-1.
Yeah, Morikawa at 20-1. Would have hit Cameron Smith at 35. He's all the way down to 18, so we're not going to touch that. If you're going to make me do 2 favorites, I guess I would say John Rahm would be my second pick because, oddly enough, he has now shifted down to 14-1. He's still amongst the favorites, but everybody's hitting Rory. Everybody's hitting Jordan Spieth. Scottie Scheffler's the hot name, whereas I feel like people are kind of forgetting that nobody is more consistent and has a better track record at just like competing at majors over the last 4 years. Than John Rahm has. So if we were to pivot, I would go there, but I think there's better value there at 21.
Right, so who else is on our card?
So on our card, again, we're chasing value here. Gold knows this. It's about finding the value and then sticking with the value. The next bet we're going to be making, Dustin Johnson at 35 to 1. Are you kidding me?
DJ?
Are you kidding me? Dustin Johnson is at 35 to 1. When you look at some of the other names that are, like, he's sandwiched between Shane Lowry and Tyrrell Hatton. I'm sorry. Dustin Johnson is not of that ilk. He is a better quality player, but he hasn't been playing great as of late. I don't think guys like him care. He just got married. Maybe he's got some wedding mojo. Maybe he was too busy planning the wedding, the seating charts. 35 to 1 is great value for a guy who is maybe the most talented golfer on the planet. So that is our next bet.
Best finish in the last year, fourth place. We need a win.
For a major or any tournament?
Again, but like
any tournament.
A lot of these guys, they rack up really good track records early in the season. They win these no-name events. Like, I want guys who have the stones. He's got it. Sticking with that, a guy who last week withdrew for a reason that we don't really know from the Byron Nelson down in Dallas, Brooks Koepka at 55 to 1. Are you kidding me? 55 to 1 for a four-time major winner? Who cares? It's a major. He'll battle through it.
At 50, I mean, the value's there.
It's just the value play.
Yeah, I get it from the value, value perspective.
Like, if we put $5 on him to win and he won, we would turn a nice, tidy little
profit. It would be a $275 cash out. So, yeah, that'd be a nice little turnaround.
Yeah, your son would have been able to do the math for us.
Yeah, he would have probably, yes.
And then right now, the final bet that we're gonna have locked in is Joaquin Niemann. Joaquin Niemann, the 16th-ranked player in the world. He just won the Genesis Invitational at Riviera
out in L.A.
Who's
your favorite Joaquin on Earth?
Probably Niemann, not Phoenix.
Not Phoenix.
He is also at 55 to 1. So that's a great iron player. Again, I worry about the short game, but he's got some win equity. He doesn't have the great track record at majors like maybe the other three guys in there, but I wanted to sort of pivot a little bit. So we do have room for another. Like, there is room for another outright
play. Can I give you one? Gooch.
You want Taylor Gooch
to round out the card. I was a big fan of him at the Masters.
I want Gooch to round it out.
I haven't done any research. Please don't listen to me.
His home area. That's why.
I hate that narrative, by the way. Like, yeah, oh, it's homecoming. Victor Hovland, he's probably played this course 100 times.
Hold on. That's what the I was about to just give you. You're the one on Friday that said you like Hovland because it's his area, possibly.
I didn't say that.
We had this conversation, I thought, on air.
I think he probably said he hated that they probably said that. This is probably the second time that he said he hated it.
Yeah, because I don't like him because every time they go to Southern California, like, oh, well, Xander Schauffele's from California, so I guess he'll win.
What's Gooch's odds? We already have six golfers on the damn card.
We're going to make some two-way bets.
We have
some
four.
To win, some in the top five, some in
Taylor
the top
Gooch
ten.
Taylor Gooch is 130 to 1.
Yeah, do a top
sprinkle?
Odds for top 10.
Okay,
you're
so
not going to win it.
Here's the top 10s we have. I'll run through them quickly. Gary Woodland, Jason Kokrak, Keegan Bradley, Tommy Fleetwood. Top 20 bets on Mackenzie Hughes, Keith Mitchell, Kevin Kisner, Bern Wiesberger. So you want to throw a little sprinkle on Taylor Gooch?
Yes.
That's fine. We have more money to spend. We have more bets
to
make.
Yes, a sprinkle on Gooch to finish in the top 10.
You want a top 10 on Gooch?
Top 10 on Gooch. What,
probably 40 to 1?
Yeah, and you know what? Let's just put a dollar on him to win, you know?
$1
at 130 to 1. If Taylor Gooch has the week of his life, we're going to be laughing all the way to the bank.
I'll be sending you plenty of texts on Sunday morning if he's even on the leaderboard in the top 15 or something.
All the bets in, we will put our entire card out. And then what? Like dollar for dollar, maybe track it? Once we get through it on Sunday, we're going to have to prove how much we've won or lost.
My only concern with how many different bets you're making is like, I don't want to just break even.
Nick said he made a lot of money betting golf, though.
But what do you want to do?
I
want to
win. I want to triple our money.
We want to win money. But what I'm saying is there's so many different bets. Like, Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
worst case is break even, it's not that bad.
In an ideal world, you'd hit two top 20 guys, two top 40 guys, a top 10 guy, and hit the winner. And then you make a lot of money.
That's okay.
But ultimately, like, here's the deal. Ultimately, you want to make money betting on golf, you have to pick winners. You just do.
That's what I'm saying. Like, do we want to have as many top 20 finish bets? I don't know if we need that many of those.
We'll do lower amounts.
Okay.
I trust you.
Thanks, Cody.
I'm not involved in any. I just make the bets. I'm going to take credit if we win, but that's it.
I like some of the picks. It's not that I don't like some of the picks.
Forever hold your peace.
Well, I've done it. On the side, no. Patrick Cantlay, I'm putting multiple bets in for him. I think he's in for a big week.
And I'll finish third.
Yeah, and I'll have a top five and a top 10 bet and a win bet, and I'll be happy.
It's not the same feeling as when you hit a 40 to 1 bet, you know?
Yeah, but
that's why golf's different. It's like you hit on like a 30 to 1,
sure,
a 40 to 1.
It is, but also that guy still has to win. The winner may not be someone outside the top 20
That's why we picked.
That's why we got Morikawa.
We got winners, dog. Winners. Seven majors amongst the four guys we picked.
Coming up next, we'll get to what's trending while Nick locks in our bets. Or I should say his girlfriend's going to bet on these for us. She gets a cut out of this. Is that what happened? Did you negotiate something behind
her
back?
Well, yeah, I'm going to have to pay for it on the other end. You guys won't have to.
So we'll get to what's trending. And J.J. Bacolo, we had him on the show earlier, the Royals general manager, and he told us it wasn't just the changeup that led to Brady Singer's success last night.
You're listening to Cody and Gold.
I'm not interested in that. That's more just, I don't want to put a foot in my mouth.
610 Sports Radio. What's trending?
All right, let's check in on the hot topics. Trending.
Number one on what's trending, the Royals in action tonight. 7:10 first pitch. Vern's on deck show at 6 o'clock. Zach Greinke on the bump. The Royals 13-22. We'll hear from the Royals general manager, J.J. Bacolo, in just a little bit. We had a chance to catch up with him earlier today.
It'll be, I mean, and you'll hear some of this stuff, but they have got to decide in or out. Like, that's really the problem they're stuck in right now, is they've made no indication. You know, buyers or sellers, rebuild or contending. And, like, the record says all one thing, that you are still in a rebuild mode and you need time. But they want to win. J.J. has still done that. And now they've started to make those moves in the pitching. And the real question is, are you going to show your willingness to win with some of the hitters, which they have not done yet? Next up on What's Trending, the U.S. Soccer Federation reaches an agreement on equal pay for the men's and women's team. As you had pointed out earlier today, it took the men's team taking a bit of a pay cut in order for that to happen, because under FIFA law, that's essentially not the case. But this was much needed specifically for U.S. soccer. The women's team wins World Cups. They win Olympic gold medals. They are great at what they do. The men's team can't get past a round of 16. So, like, I mean, and they're more valuable. This isn't even a case of, like, where you might say a women's pro team might be more successful in a area versus a men's. No, financially, the women's team is worth more to U.S. soccer from a money standpoint than the men's team. This makes a lot of sense. I'm really happy. They sued and won themselves this right, essentially, to negotiate. They got back pay anyway when they sued. To avoid this going forward, this is the way to handle it. Equal pay for both the men's and women's soccer teams.
The CBA is a 10-year agreement. Up next on What's Trending, the NBA playoffs continued last night. We saw the Eastern Conference Finals Game 1 go for the Miami Heat. They were trailing at halftime, and it was a great first half for Boston, but a third quarter swung the entire game for the Boston, for the Miami Heat against the Boston Celtics. Western Conference Finals tonight, Golden State taking on Luka and the Dallas Mavericks, the Warriors 5.5-point favorites.
You know, Gold won on the Heat last night and won a huge parlay. If only he told us to bet our money on a huge parlay, we could have had all the money we wanted.
Yep.
Keep your health for yourself, buddy.
Well, we're relying on your golf skills this week.
That's what I said. I wanted to just have you bet all of our money for 1 week.
Could you imagine if I would have agreed to it this week?
Notice I'm not making any side golf bets, Cody.
Oh my God, it would have been incredible.
If I would have agreed to that deal this week.
My bets are your bets. So, like, I actually think it's super selfish that you're making side bets.
Right now.
I've been doing my own betting for a while.
No, for the golf. The golf is ours.
The golf is a show bet. We've established the golf.
You shouldn't be doing can't lay bets on the side. It's like you don't believe in us.
Cheating on us.
How?
If anything, just double down on the bets that we're making. It's an act of solidarity.
Well, a couple of the guys you mentioned I'll be making bets on as well, yeah. I just also...
Were you already going to bet them, or are you doing it because I made compelling arguments?
So my bets this week on my own were going to be Patrick Cantlay, Patrick Reed, and then Matsuyama. And I think now you've talked me into perhaps not betting on Hovland.
Okay, it's Hovland. You got it right.
No.
Lastly on What's Trending, James Bradberry gets a one-year $10 million deal from the Philadelphia Eagles. One other target off the list for Kansas City. Although it's funny. We just keep talking about all these possible free agents the Chiefs could target, and they're not interested in any of them based on where they all go.
No. Yeah, maybe in some cases it might even be mutual. It's really bizarre. Some of these contracts, the Chiefs have $14 million in cap space, but they have not gone that direction. That's probably part of our conversation we were having earlier about Orlando Brown Jr. and where they're at financially as well. That's what's trending here on Cody and Gold. Earlier today, we caught up with the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, J.J. Bacolo. We started off, we asked him, all right, Brady Singer, great outing last night. How much is it was just the changeup coming together for him, or was there more to the story?
Well, it wasn't just that simple. I mean, he hit fastball command. It was outstanding. His slider was outstanding. And then he mixed in 16, 17 changeups, which is something I don't think he's done in his career. Something he committed to when he's back in Omaha, and he's starting to get a feel for it, and it's going to really change the way he can attack hitters, and more importantly, how hitters can plan to attack him. So it was really a great night for him.
Was it just a matter of talking himself into it, JJ? We talked a little bit about this with like Jacob Junis, where you can make suggestions and it can be easy to try to think about those things. But then when you get into the game and something isn't working, it's hard to stick with it. Was being sent down, what do you think kind of motivated this transition?
Now, there's a couple things I think come into play here. First, you know, he was put in the major leagues in 2020 when he really wasn't a finished product. And that was calculated by us because of the COVID season. We thought he would develop better at the major league level than at the alternate site. With that, he had to compete. And the way he competes at that time was fastball slider. So it was really difficult. The 2019 season, I identify a little bit more. We could have done more pressing on the changeup and how important it was. But, of course, we didn't anticipate him being in the major leagues in 2020. And then fast forward to 22, you know, spring training went the way it did. Then he gets optioned out and his back's against the wall and, you know, a little bit more open-minded. What do I need to do? And the message was simple. Your fastball profile needs to be better, more like it has been in the past. Your command needs to be better. You need to throw that changeup and have conviction with it. And he'll gain confidence. He already has. I mean, just in the, you know, three outings in AAA, and then last night, the confidence is growing with it. And he threw it in some counts last night. I didn't expect him to do that, which really just shows how much more confident he is in just really a 3 or 4 week period.
JJ, is it safe to say, because he was the extra man on the doubleheader, that it's procedural that he got sent back down and we should expect Brady Singer to make another start soon?
Well, it's hard to deny what he did last night. I mean, we're going to make that decision. He can't pitch for 4 days right now, so being a 27th man, it makes sense that he goes back, and then we'll see how the next couple days go. But, you know, what I will say, it's hard to deny what he did last night.
JJ, when you're looking at the development, I think it was Dayton that was talking about it yesterday and you a little bit over there, and he mentioned rushing the starting pitchers up there. If that's what happened, too many of the young starters got up to the big leagues sooner than you guys would have liked it, what's the solution now to getting them ready or getting them to the level you need them to be?
Well, you're starting to see it. I mean, Brady was optioned out. Bubich was optioned out. You know, when you start making moves like that, I think pitchers are starting to get out of that development mode and the win now mode. We have a level of patience that's probably as great as any team in baseball. But when you're not getting consistent starts the way it has gone the first 5 weeks, something has to be done. Got to get optioned back to the minor leagues. We don't like to do it. But they're on our roster, and that's who we have to work with. So if they're not getting it done in the major leagues, they're going to go to Omaha and figure it out. And when they figure it out, they'll come back up.
When you're looking at some of those other young starters in the minors, like Heasley, who just came up, or some of the other ones who look good at the double or triple A level, does that mean they might get an opportunity if some of these other major league guys aren't getting it done?
Yeah, you always have to manage your roster, but we have to recognize and evaluate who's pitching well and who can succeed and help this major league team win. But, you know, we did it last year. I mean, Zerbin Heasley came up from double A, so it's not like we haven't done that before. You do need to have somebody who's performing well. You need to have opportunity, and then you have to have room on your roster if they're a non-roster pitcher. But, you know, we'll continue to look at who's pitching well, who's playing well, and whoever can help us will get opportunities.
We're talking to the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, J.J. Piccolo. Over on the hitting side, we know the move earlier this week to move on from Terry Bradshaw, and Alex Zumwalt now takes over that role here for this season. What do you believe he brings to the table that perhaps you haven't seen at the major league level the last couple of years?
Well, in 2020, when we made the change in the minor leagues, or fall of 19, really, the concerted effort was decisions. We felt like we chased too much. We didn't hit the ball hard, which kind of go hand in hand. And we were swinging and missing too much. So Alex's background, he was an advanced scout for us. So he watched a lot of major league games over a number of years, played a lot of years in the minor leagues. He's just got a really good feel for what happens in a game, and he's able to make adjustments. But when we asked him to fill that role, he came up with a really good plan along with Drew Saylor and Keone Duran and Mike Tozar. The hitters have bought into it. There's processes in place that a lot of our young hitters are now getting to the major leagues are accustomed to. And more than anything, when you think about culture and environment, Alec, Keone, they're such positive guys. They have energy. I mean, I don't know how they do it every day. I mean, it is hours in the cage. And they just go. I mean, they just go and go and go, and it's infectious. And players love being around him. So, you know, at this point in time, when you make a move in the middle of the year, you got to think about the clubhouse and the camaraderie, and you know, what's the messaging going to be, and how are players going to be. You know, are they going to be receptive to what's going on? And I think just Alex's positivity along with Keone, Mike Tozar, John Mabry, it's going to change, you know, so we felt it was necessary right now.
How would you describe the clubhouse, I guess, at the moment, JJ? Dayton has talked endlessly about how important that culture is. And I imagine if you guys were expecting to win at the beginning of this year, so was the team, and got off to a rough start. How is the clubhouse now, considering there's a lot more movement than there has been over the last couple of years as far as who could be sent down or even coaches and stuff?
Well, I think that, you know, first out, you know, I know Monday was a tough day for a lot of guys because they've known Terry since the day they signed. So it was a tough day. And really, other than Salvador Perez, nobody was on this team the last time we made a coaching change in the middle of the year. But, you know, the urgency is there. You know, I think the best message I got from some of the veteran players on Monday was, hey, we're accountable. You know, we weren't swinging the bats well. We feel bad that we were part of the problem here. So when players start to hold themselves accountable at a level that is acceptable in the major leagues, you're moving in the right direction. And I think the clubhouse was a little bit down Monday, picked up a little bit yesterday. We knew there was going to be a little bit of a transition, you know, until things settle in. But there's, you know, that upbeat positivity that we need, you know, will exist. And I think the accountability piece is the major part of it. And we have enough veteran players on this team, especially offensively, that can help lead us to where we need to go.
Speaking of Royals general manager J.J. Piccolo here on Cody and Gold, for the people who are trying to justify Bradshaw versus Eldred, I know those conversations came up a little bit. Am I reading this correctly in that part of this is Cal is working with a lot younger pitchers and there were established veterans, and that's why maybe you move there? Because, like, statistically, you could say, well, both sides have struggled. Both pitching and offense have ranked near the bottom five too many times or too consistently, JJ. What, you know, like, when you're trying to explain the reasoning behind why you make one move versus another, what's the logic behind it?
Yeah, the expectation was simply higher on the offensive side to start the year. We knew from a pitching perspective there was going to be some ups and downs. I mean, three of our five starters every time around, you know, don't have more than really a year and a half in the major leagues, and some of them even, you know, less than a year. That's tough. That's really tough. It's tough on our bullpen, and we have to recognize that. And when you throw Brad Keller in the mix, he's in his fourth year, but he's still 26 years old. So, you know, really the only veteran guy we have in the rotation is Zach Greinke. So that's a lot to shoulder on young pitchers. It's a lot that trickles down to our bullpen. So we knew there was going to be some struggles there with our pitching. The hitting, we had higher expectations right from opening day, and it just wasn't happening. And that was simply why the decision was made with hitting versus pitching. We're going to continue to bust our butts to get our need to go. The urgency is there. Cal understands it. Mike understands it. Larry Carter understands it. Paul Gibson in minor leagues understands it. And that's what we've got to go. We've got to go to work every day and understand where we are, but also where we want to get to and what are realistic expectations.
I feel like expectations obviously were pretty high for Carlos Hernandez heading into this season after what we saw last year. Do you view right now the bullpen as the best option for him? Is that something that's short term?
Well, he's gonna start tomorrow. The way we lined up with the doubleheader, he's gonna start tomorrow. Carlos needs to pick it up. You know, he hasn't pitched the way he pitched last year. He's very aware of it. You know, he's searching for answers right now. We got to get the shape to his breaking ball, you know, where it was last year. His fastball command needs to be better. So there are things that, you know, we've identified. We're working on it in his bullpen sessions. And now it's got to happen in the game. So we'll see what happens once we get through this time through the rotation and make a decision on whether or not it's staying in rotation or go to the bullpen.
Any idea on the velocity dip with him, JJ? I think a lot of people have asked that question. Is that just a year-to-year thing, or do you guys have something figured out on that end either?
Well, he's not being as aggressive. I mean, this guy can throw 100 miles an hour. He's just not being aggressive. And when you're not aggressive, it's a sign of confidence or lack of confidence. So that's part of the messaging as well. You got to get back to being aggressive, attack the zone. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. You give up a home run, who cares? But if you walk a guy or two and then give up a home run, that's a bigger problem. But stay on the attack. That's what you did last year. And I think that is probably why his velocity's down.
We know Salvador Perez put on the 10-day injured list after game one of yesterday's doubleheader. At this point, any update on how severe you guys believe this is?
Well, you know, Salvi wanted to play game two. He was very concerned with MJ catching two games. You know, he's never done that. I think he was the third catcher in Royals history to do that. He's never done that as a professional. We always, in the minor leagues, split games and doubleheaders up like we do in the major leagues. So he's really concerned for MJ, which, you know, is an indication of how much of a team guy Salvi is. And he really wanted to play. But it was in his best interest, our best interest, not only not to play, but to go on the DL. 10 to 14 days, you know, it's a thumb, so it's his left thumb. So catching 125 pitches a night, whatever it is, he's taking a pounding on that thumb all night long. And then, of course, as a hitter, you know, all it takes is one jam shot, and he might be out longer. So it was the best thing for him and for the organization to go on the IL.
Does that mean, I guess, when you look at it, does that mean maybe DH time for him when he comes back, JJ?
We'll see. I think it all depends on how he's feeling. You know, Salvi's he's a warrior. He doesn't want to hit. You know, he was so distraught, you know, when we made the decision in between games. He wants to play, and he wants to catch. I mean, he's playing right now. His hip's banged up. His knee's banged up. You know, he just wants to play. I mean, that's what makes him such a great player. You know, so we'll just have to see how he's feeling. I know what his answer is going to be, but we'll see how he feels and whatever's best, not only at the time, but even long term. We got a lot of games left in the season, and we need him. So we take any risks that he would be out of the lineup for a longer period of time.
JJ Pecola, Royals general manager, thanks as always for calling in. Really appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Thank you.
All right, so that was our earlier conversation today with the general manager of the Kansas City Royals, JJ Pecola, and he answered your question about, all right, well, why is one thing viewed differently than the other? That one thing, Terry Bradshaw hitting versus Cal Eldred and pitching.
Both have been bad.
And he said the expectation was simply higher for the offense and the veteran presence that they had offensively versus you're dealing with young pitching on the pitching side. Now, the question really within that also is, well, then, do you, and we know the answer for most Royals fans, Lisa, do you believe Cal Eldred can actually develop?
Improve them now
that they're here. Yes, we acknowledge that his track is more difficult, given their age, than the offense's track.
Although he has way more talent to work with.
But we perceive there's way more talent, right?
So most of the hitters they have on here are guys who are on small deals. I mean, he does. He clearly has more talent to work with than the offense's talent.
More talent to work with, but like we can, it
depends. Or it's a deeper talent bed.
Yeah. It should be. It's just like,
it should be.
If they don't develop,
is that all on him, too?
Correct. It's the weird balance there. Royals trying to make it a couple wins in a row tonight out at Kauffman Stadium.
Happy Greinke Day.
That's right. Zach Greinke on the bump. We're back at it tomorrow here on Cody and Gold. Up next is The Drive. I also understand that Nick going to make a special appearance on The Drive in the 2 o'clock hour, so you don't want to miss that as well. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Listening to Cody and Gold. Tune in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour every day at 11:30 on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.